We're continuing our series. We've been looking at relationships in different forms recently. And today we're going to look at the most common relationship anybody has, and that's friendship. And there's a slide. Sorry, I forgot to get my little clicker thing out. True friendship, we're calling it. And this just shows you, this is a helpful little animation, the levels of closeness. And these are the four ways of being close to somebody. Friendship, love, the results of a nuclear accident, or cannibalism. So just to be very clear, we are looking at the first one this morning. Maybe there'll be a future teaching series on some of the other things. Now, it's also been said on this subject of friendship, more seriously, a good friend is somebody who helps you move, but a great friend is somebody who helps you move a dead body. And sadly, it seems few of us have many great friends. Friendship in this country, honestly, is in crisis. We have loads of other crises, but friendship is in crisis. Let me show you some statistics about this. This is scary. 60% of people have nobody to talk to about mental health, relationships, or money. This is according to a BBC big study. 60% of people have nobody to talk to about those things. 17% of people are in contact with friends, family, or neighbours less than once a week. That's shocking. That's about one in six people. 40% of older people, I don't know what the barrier of age for that is, but 40% of older people claim that TV is their main source of company. Isn't that terrible? 60% of those, this is not just an old person's thing, 60% of those aged 18 to 34 report feeling lonely sometimes or often. That's a big chunk of younger people. And finally, interestingly, Sunday is statistically the loneliest day of the week. It's the day when most people feel the most lonely. If only there was a community of people that gathered on a Sunday that people could be part of somewhere. So we're in the middle of a loneliness epidemic. And I wonder if you see yourself in any of those stats and think, yeah, I'm actually one of those people. It's a problem. But why is finding meaningful friendship such a struggle in our society right now? Here are, I think, some of the reasons. Firstly, influence of social media. Now, the problem is not with social media per se, because there's lots of great things about it, and in certain ways it enhances friendships. But social media overpromises and underdelivers. I've got over 1,000 Facebook friends, I think. Some people are shaking their head. Have you checked how many Facebook friends I've got? But that's not the same thing as really being friends with somebody, is it? There's something about social media and the carefully crafted persona that everybody has on it that means we're bombarded with the idea that everybody else has got this really great life put together and when we don't. And even though we all know that that's true, it still gets pushed onto you in some way, doesn't it? And it inhibits friendships because we're constantly pushed to present an inauthentic version of ourselves. Everybody else is doing it and then we do it too. And inauthentic people are always lonely because they never know if anybody knows them. They're always lonely. The second problem, I would believe, is the elevation of romantic love. Our culture has made romantic love or erotic love the be-all and end-all to the point that everybody, Christians included, slips into the idea that you cannot be happy without it. You cannot have a meaningful life without it. How many glossy magazines do you find in the shops about who's friends with who? None. It's who's sleeping with who. That's what everybody cares about. How many classic albums are there about friendship? I can't think of any. And the great irony of this is that making romantic relationships the absolute centre of everything at the expense of friendships puts too much pressure on the romantic relationships, and that's often the reason why they don't work out, because you're looking for all your expectations to be met in that one place. I love my wife, but I need to be close to other people. She definitely needs to be close to other people. Third is the dream of independence. Our culture puts huge value on the idea of being independent. It's like a badge of honour to say, oh, I do everything myself. I don't need anybody. I can just get about life myself and make everything work. But it's a complete myth. We all need other people. But getting into meaningful friendship is very difficult if everybody has the prior belief that they don't really need any friends, that they're just a kind of optional extra. And probably most importantly, is the experience of being let down. There's all sorts of external things, but this is a personal experience that I would imagine we have all had. And it's probably the greatest threat to real friendship. We've all at some point or other been let down by friends, haven't we? We've all at some point or other been let down, at least in childhood and probably in adulthood as well. When I was growing up, my family moved around quite a lot, so I was constantly having to make new friends. And I didn't really like it. I'm quite an introverted person. And I remember once, and I must have been about 11, I got into there's this group of friends at school, and I kind of got in with this group of friends, and it was really good. They were already friends, and then I joined in. And then they started being a little bit off with me over a few weeks. It felt like a really long time because I was 11. And I can still picture, I was at the house of one of them, and I just said to him straight, "You don't want to be friends with me, do you?" And I can remember just going, "Not really." And I was back to square one. I was back at school where I basically didn't have any friends and I had to start again. Now, don't feel too sorry for me. I was probably a complete pain in the bum when I was 11, I'm pretty sure. He was probably being very reasonable. But I bet everybody has had that experience, especially as a child, of being rejected as a friend. And those experiences affect our whole lives. And they make us guarded. You know, time after time we're let down, we get more guarded. And I don't doubt that some of us, as adults, have experienced being badly let down by friends as well. So those are some of the problems. What do we do about it? What can we do about it? There's a part of the Bible, and it's a book we call Proverbs. And it's basically an ancient collection of Jewish wisdom. And the thing about Proverbs is they're true regardless of what you do with God. They're just true about life. So you can completely reject God, and they still kind of work. You can still see, you go, yeah, I can see that that's true in real life when you read them. And it's amazing because it was written about 3,000 years ago, which just tells you that people are basically the same. People are still the same as they were 3,000 years ago. We have the same issues. And we have a culture now, I think, where we have loads of catchphrases and stuff, and they're on adverts and on TV shows, and Proverbs are like that, but better. And the Proverbs talk about many things, but one of them is the type of friendships that we would be wise to pursue. And we're not going to look at a particular passage. We're going to jump around and look at a few different proverbs and see what it says. First thing, true friendship involves a choice. There's this lovely proverb, 12 verse 26. The righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. And that's quite an interesting phrase, because most people will say, oh yeah, choose your friends wisely. But it's usually in terms of how trustworthy those friends are. Fair enough. But this is about considering the influence that your friends will have on you. Everyone says, well, you know, I'm independent-minded, you know, my friends, they're around, but I think for myself, I'm my own person. Oh, really? And where did you get the idea that being independent-minded and thinking for yourself was a virtue? You didn't invent that. You were influenced by somebody else. Everybody is influenced by the people that they spend time with. If you spend 3 nights a week with some friends who like playing bridge, what are you going to end up doing? You're going to play bridge. You end up being like the friends that you have. But spending time with people is not the same as being friends with them. Do you ever stop about and think about who you're spending time with and why? You might not have much choice about your family or your colleagues, but you do have a choice about who your friends are, and they will inevitably shape you. They just will. And the proverb talks about that choice in terms of being righteous or being wicked. It's a very strong way of putting it, isn't it? In other words, you are morally responsible for your friendship choices. Has anyone ever thought about it like that? You are morally responsible for your friendship choices. What a funny idea. A few of us are looking at the person next to us and going, might need to make some changes. Next, true friendship means constancy. Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. A real friend loves at all times. That means when it's good, when it's bad, when it's in between. And of course, we all know, don't we, that a friend is somebody who's available when times are hard. But when things get difficult, personally, I'm drawn to the people who are also available to me when it wasn't hard, who just wanted to spend time with me anyway, even when my life was going fine. If you are only a friend to people when they're having a rough patch, that's really honourable, but that's not being their friend, that's being their social worker. It's really honourable. It's a one-way thing. Real friendships are when you do the whole range of life together. Real friendship is absolutely about taking some soup around to somebody's house when they have a cold. But I think often we're guilty of losing the richness of the day-to-dayness of friendship. It's being available to do the stuff that cultivates the relationship. And because of the pressure of work and life and family, and in some cases because we can't be bothered, we often struggle to commit to everyday friendship, to social stuff. And one of my pet hates, actually, is when someone tries to organise some sort of social get-together with a group, and they stick their neck out and they offer something and say, hey, everybody, should we do this thing? And everyone says, oh, I might come. When do you need to know by? And it's mainly my people my age or younger who are guilty of that. But basically what they're doing is saying, when is the last possible second I can commit to your thing in case something better comes up? That's terrible friendship. If you do that, stop it. Just showing up, being up for being together, having fun, you need to do that to build the bridge of trust so that the relationship develops for the hard moments. You need to just be present and social. Another one on this. Do not forsake your friend or a friend of your family, and do not go to your relative's house when disaster strikes you. Better a neighbour nearby than a relative far away. And this gets at a related problem. If you recall some of the stats that I put up earlier, one of the reasons that people in our society end up old and lonely is that they put all of their energy into their biological family and don't give anything elsewhere. And that works to a level until the day when your family aren't around for whatever reason, and then you're on your own. About a year and a half ago, shortly after my family moved to Worthing, I was really sick. If you know me, you may remember this because I moaned about it quite a lot. And the GP, when I went to see them, sent me straight to hospital. And with a small child, we had to rely on people we'd basically just met to help us out. Our family don't live nearby, our extended family. And that's been the case for Naomi and I for years. So we've always made friends who are like family out of necessity. And it's a really good thing. So as the proverb says, don't forsake a friend or a friend of your family. That's just good long-term practical thinking. Make the effort to make friends and keep them. You need them more than just having just your family. You need more friends than that. As I said before, I love my wife. I think she loves me. But we definitely need other friends. Definitely need other friends. Next thing. True friendship means candor. We don't really use that word often, do we? Candor just means kind of being honest and speaking the truth. And there's a lovely proverb. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. An enemy multiplies kisses. I love this. This was written in a Middle Eastern Jewish culture, which to this day has a very big emphasis on speaking your mind. Basically, politeness and political correctness don't really exist in the Middle East, if you've ever been there. Our culture is very different, and that's not all bad. But we've got to the place where people think, if you disagree with me, you're against me. Or if you don't support my decision, no matter how bonkers, then you're not really my friend. What absolute nonsense. Absolute garbage. But speaking the truth to somebody is hard. The proverb uses the word rebuke. It's very strong. It's telling somebody off. No one wants to be rebuked, do they? And it's paired with this other thought, wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. How does that work? Well, an enemy isn't just somebody that wants to go to war with you. It's somebody who is more interested in themselves than in you. An enemy can't be bothered to tell you the truth and risk the discomfort. An enemy can't be bothered. Why would they? It's an inconvenience. They'll shower you with kisses. They'll say nice things. It'll make for an easy life. But a friend is willing to undergo the discomfort of wounding you, to inconvenience themselves to do it. This is me and my closest friend, Ben, in one of our more serious moments. And we're great friends. We were best man for each other's weddings. We've known each other for years. We've lived together, laughed loads of times, and I love the guy. And about 5 years ago, Ben got engaged to a young lady, and all of the rest of his friends, myself included, thought it was a really bad idea. Long story why, but we all thought it was a really bad idea. And I knew I had to speak to him. And we had one particular conversation, and we were just sat either side of our dining table, and it was hard work. And I had to say to him, mate, I think this is a bad idea. I don't think you should marry this young woman. And I knew going into the conversation that if he still married her, our friendship would be tricky forever, because he would always know that I thought he was marrying the wrong person. It was really hard to talk to him. Long story short, he did break it off. He's now married to somebody else who's brilliant, and it all ended well. But the thing is, I had to risk wounding him. It was painful, but it had to be done. And we all know, don't we? Speaking the truth to somebody is really hard, but I think this helps. The proverb assumes that when you speak the truth to somebody, you are already their friend. Just walking around saying difficult things to people about their blind spots isn't friendship, it's rude. Becca's nodding, that's one of her favourite words. It's also not just giving your opinion about absolutely everything that you think. Good truth speaking is carefully chosen words about the real issue at the right time about the things that matter. If you've got an existing friendship, a friendship of constancy, the bridge will be strong enough to take the weight of the tough conversation. Just to turn that around slightly, let me ask, how are you at receiving truth from your friends? Can your friends bring things up with you, even tough things, without you flying off the handle or changing the subject? Can your friends do that? My friend Ben has historically been good at telling me when my jokes have become inappropriate. Just about always, somebody says from the front row. I used to argue with him about it, but he was right. He was right, but he was willing to say it to me, which most other people wouldn't have been. So, that's a glimpse of what Proverbs says about friendship. And as a church, we want to live this out. We want to do all of this. The church is supposed to be this wonderful community of overlapping friendships, sacrificial people. But often we get it wrong, don't we? We get it wrong. We've all been let down by people at church. And if that's you, if you've been friended badly by anybody at church, I'm sorry about that. That's not how it's supposed to be. We Christians aren't perfect. But remember, if you're looking around thinking, oh, these people aren't perfect, you're not either. None of us is a perfect friend. All of us have that problem. And so here's the thing. Everything I've said so far, I think, is good, solid advice, regardless of what you do with God or with Christianity. And that's part of the genius of Proverbs. They work regardless of what you do with God. But on their own, they're of limited help. It's great having a set of aspirations of what to be like as a friend, but there's another proverb that says this. Many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person who can find? Many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person who can find? Our innermost desire is for the kind of friendship that even our best friends fall short of. And we can't be that friend either. When I was reading around, the American psychologist Brené Brown says it like this. After studying vulnerability, shame, and authenticity for the past decade, here's what I've learned. A deep sense of love and belonging is an irreducible need for all people. We are biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to love, to be loved, to belong. When those needs are not met, we don't function as we're meant to. We break, we fall apart, we ache, we hurt others. We all want great friends, and yet nobody in this room is qualified to meet all of anybody else's needs as a friend. None of us can do it. So outside Christian faith, that's all there is. There's good advice, a nice aspiration, and then the tough reality about the great gap between our desires for friendship and our regular experience. That's all there is. If only, in our broken and lonely society, if only there was a greater friend who could fulfill what we're after and who could transform our friendships. If only. I mentioned earlier that Proverbs was written about 3,000 years ago, and like all the other books of the Old Testament, it sort of mysteriously points forward in time to a solution to every problem, friendship included. And it's a person, and there's this one proverb hidden away that gives a tiny glimpse of a heads up about what's going to happen later in the New Testament. And it says this, One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who is closer than a brother. There is a friend. We could really do with a perfect friend. What does a perfect friend look like? Someone who permanently chooses us. Someone who is a constant presence. Someone who speaks to us with genuine and yet gentle candor. And somebody who always includes us in a community with other people. So you can use Proverbs as great advice about friendships, and by all means do. But what about this friend? Who is this friend? This proverb would have really stood out 3,000 years ago, perhaps more than any other in the book, and there's loads of them. You see, in Middle Eastern culture, family is everything. Family is everything. And, you know, that's often the only place that you would look for help with anything at all. Your brother would be the person with whom you'd have the longest relationship in your life. Think about it. Your parents will likely die before you. You will likely die before your children. That's usually how it happens. Your siblings are the people that you have the longest relationship with in your whole life, normally. You overlap with them hugely. Your brother would be the one that could get away with saying hard things to you because he's your brother. He'd be the one that you could trust with anything because he's your brother. He's your wingman. He's your backup. He's your companion. He's your place to bounce ideas off. But Proverbs makes this amazing promise. There is a friend. There is a friend who sticks closer. And this person will be closer to you than your own flesh and blood. And note, this isn't saying it's mutual. This friend sticks close to you regardless of what you're doing. This friend sticks close to you. And 1,000 years after Proverbs was written, the book we know as John's Gospel records many things about Jesus and things that he said and did. And the night before he was killed, he had a really intense chat with his closest friends. And one of them, a guy called John, wrote this down. And because Jesus knows what's coming, he knows the authorities are after him, it's kind of like a deathbed chat where you tell all the closest people all your most important thoughts. This is a little bit of the conversation, just a snapshot. And Jesus says this, "My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you may go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command, love each other." There's loads of stuff we could talk about in this passage, but I want to finish by just drawing out two things. Firstly, if Christian faith is true, and for some of us that's still a big if, and if it's true, then God lowers himself to our level and invites us to be his friends. Look at Jesus' life. Look here at how he says he chooses us. Look at the rest of his life and see if he measures up in terms of constancy and candor. Every other religion or worldview offers great advice about friendships. Go and read it. But in Christianity, God offers us a great friend. Not just great advice, but a great friend. Secondly, Jesus says he's chosen his friends to bear fruit. In other words, he will grow character change in them. We said earlier that all of us is shaped by who we choose as friends, like it or not. When you are friends with Jesus, he will reshape all your other relationships. This passage begins and ends with Jesus saying, love each other. Begins and ends with that. But everything in between is him saying, I've already loved you. I've already loved you. And it spills over. If you are friends with Jesus, there is less pressure on your other friends to meet your needs. You can enjoy them more. If you're friends with Jesus, you can experience growing freedom in all the things that mess up your relationships. If you're friends with Jesus, you're loved and you can reach a level of security that means you're okay with being challenged about how you live. It doesn't devastate you when someone contradicts you. There is a friend, as the proverb says. There is a friend. A few hours after he said these words, Jesus was crucified. And the Bible understands that event as God's way of permanently securing our friendship. Jesus takes the hit for our bad friending, and then he offers friendship to us. That is the friendship that makes him closer than a brother. Here's some questions on the screen, and I think Piero is just going to play some music, but I'd really like us just to take a few minutes to dwell on these. What I'd like you to do, pick one of the first three that you think you need to think about, and everybody also pick the last one, because that's really the most important one. Are you friends with Jesus right now? Are you friends with Jesus right now? And on what basis? On what basis? Is it because you're his servant, or is it because he's your friend and he's already dealt with your bad friendship? On what basis are you friends with Jesus right now? Let's take a few minutes. These guys are going to play, and then we're going to come back together and sing.